Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland, and this week we have a guest host, Ben Bolin of Car Stuff and Stuff They Don't Want You to Know and Brain Stuff and other stuff. Lauren is out this week, so Ben has kindly offered to step in. So thank you very much, Ben.
Oh, thank you. This is fantastic. Big fan. The last time I was here, I used a joke, longtime fan, first time co-host. And
yeah, so we can't use that one again.
Yeah, but I'm doing that thing where you just say it anyway.
Right.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me on the show, especially because this is a topic that you hipped me to. And I think I think that this presents a fantastic cautionary tale.
Yes.
And a fantastic, almost forensic experience on our part.
Yeah, yeah. What Ben is referring to is the topic Better Place, a company that this was actually a request that a listener sent in. The listener, Russell, via email, wrote in and said, it would be great if you could do a podcast on a Better Place electric car project. Following up on your Tesla podcast, it would be interesting to show the other approaches that are being tried around the world. And before we get into this, I really want to give a shout out to Max Chafkin, who wrote an article for Fast Company. It's a phenomenal piece that really details the entire life cycle of Better Place, which it was not long. So first of all, spoiler alert, folks, Better Place has gone to a better place.
Yeah, it's gone somewhere for sure.
Yeah.
And it's strange because I think that's such a fantastic name for a company.
Yes.
That it made me so sad.
Particularly considering what the whole thrust of this company was, as Russell has already mentioned, It has to do with electric vehicles. And the article at Fast Company, by the way, if you ever want to look it up, is called A Broken Place, The Spectacular Failure of the Startup That Was Going to Change the World. And really, that is a pretty accurate assessment of what went on. It's, you know, it's unfortunate because, again, the premise the whole purpose of this company was a noble one, right? It was the idea of creating an infrastructure for electric vehicles. Because one of the things we talk about, and Ben, you've talked about this a lot on Car Stuff, is how going to an alternative fuel source is a huge, huge endeavor.
Yeah, because there's already such a massive conglomeration of sunk cost in our current fuel sources. You know, the idea of rebuilding essentially an interstate system and rebuilding every single gas station that we have. And just think about how many gas stations you see in 24 hours and having to make just one gas station every 50 miles into an electric one is a Herculean endeavor. And I just want to put in one seed here. The reason, you know, you've heard this story about why they named this company A Better Place, right? It's, it's based on, the founder, Shai Agassi. He had a visit to the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. Do you remember this?
Yeah, he went to that forum, which was had a whole bunch of young entrepreneurs, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he started getting interested in this idea of alternative fuel.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a question asked by a guy named Klaus Schwab there who said, how do you make the world a better place by 2020? And this guy who would go on to found Better Place decided that this would be my inspiration, right? And that led up to the origin of this company in 2007. They publicly launched. I'm jumping over because we should talk about their grandiose plan, right?
Well, sure. But back in 2005 was when he went to this meeting, and his idea of a better place was to get the world off of oil dependency.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we have to point out is Shai Agassi came from Israel, and obviously, if you want to, you have to look at politics as part of this. It's not, and economics. It's not just the idea of a green movement, right? Which was already becoming a huge thing in the mid 2000s.
Right.
The green technology was one of those kind of rising star industries. That idea that, oh, we should really invest in this because it's the next big thing. Anyone who was paying attention to tech in the mid 2000s, mid to late 2000s, you know, that was like a buzzword of buzzwords, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of faded since then. Not that people are less interested in developing green technology. It's just no longer this, like for a while, it was a bandwagon thing.
Right. Yeah. That's a perfect way to say it, because for a number of years, for a period of time, this would be something where every company, every tech company especially, had some sort of green initiative.
Right.
It was, you were just supposed to have one, you know?
Yeah. And so Shai Agassi was really kind of jumping on this momentum, and we'll be talking a lot about him in this podcast and about how he kind of had these grandiose ideas, like you said, this grandiose plan, this enormous, showman sort of persona, very P.T. Barnum, very Elon Musk in many ways. We'll be comparing him and contrasting him with Elon Musk as well, because there's another guy who, very similar in that he went with electric vehicles as one of his big initiatives, and is definitely a marketing genius, very type A personality, very charismatic, but also can rub people the wrong way. You know, he's got a very specific vision, and if you don't fall in line with it, there can be lots of friction. Well, so is Shai Agassi, but Agassi perhaps had a less strategic approach.
Sure, less methodical.
Yeah. So that grandiose plan was to be able to come up with a system, an infrastructure that would support a fleet of electric vehicles where in ideal situations, you could get an entire country, in this case, Israel, really, to switch from gasoline powered vehicles to electric vehicles. And I mean, it was, he was starting to make promises before there was any kind of idea of a company, let alone a business plan. Like there wasn't even a thing to have a business plan yet. And he was already starting to make these sort of big promises.
Mm-hmm.
He and another guy, started to think up, how can we create a proposal for this?
Mm-hmm.
And that other guy would be, Andre Zarour, who was CEO of a company called Bioprocessors. And they wrote a white paper called Transforming Global Transportation, which became kind of a rock star white paper at various conferences around the world.
Right. Like, of course you've read Transforming Global Transportation, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, of course I have.
And even people who used to work for Better Place are still like, even after all the crazy kind of roller coaster events that they've gone through, and even after the ones who will say, like, you know, Agassi kind of went off the reservation,
mm-hmm.
They will still cite this paper as being an inspirational paper. So it's not that necessarily the ideas were bad. It's just a question of whether or not they were actionable in the way that that Better Place went about it.
Right. The application of these ideas. And, you know, I'm just going to get on one little soapbox here, Jonathan.
Sure.
It's true that the state of global transportation and the state of global energy supply is ultimately, the way it's going now, it's unsustainable.
I mean, sure.
It's not going to be a perpetual motion machine, and it can be often politically charged for people to say that. But especially as you and I were talking about off air earlier, especially in the case of Israel.
Yes. Neighbor to many nations with which it has at best a sense of animosity, right?
Yeah, right.
There's certainly huge amounts of conflict between Israel and a lot of oil producing nations. So Israel has some very politically motivated reasons to get off of the dependency on oil. The United States is not that much different in many ways. If you look back to the proposals under the Bush administration about moving to a hydrogen-based economy,
mm-hmm.
one of the big incentives was for this national security reason to get mm-hmm. off of the dependency for oil. And so it's not just this environmental approach, although that's largely the way Better Place was positioned, because it's a feel good way of saying, hey, this is an important technology to invest in. But from a national security standpoint, it also had real importance. So this is something we have to address, because otherwise no one would have sunk money into this venture. And as it turns out, people sunk a lot of money into it.
Ooh, yeah. Let's see. So the first round.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was first they got $100 million from one investor alone, just $100 million,
mm-hmm.
plus $30 million of his own fund. So $100 million from his company
mm-hmm.
and $30 million more from him. And then ultimately they raised another $200 million. So I think you know, some reports say 200, 250 million. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you're looking around 300 million in that initial funding round. And that is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of scratch.
Don't know if you realize this. Yeah. So one of the reasons we can talk about this being a great case study is that if you look at the dot-com era, the dot-com bubble burst, mm-hmm. one of the things that people bring up over and over is how these companies that didn't have any sort of way of generating revenue, they had no product yet,
right,
were getting crazy amounts of venture capital early in their phase,
mm-hmm.
In their life cycle. And it meant that you had people with tons of capital to burn through and no real incentive to rein all that in and take a very methodical and conservative approach to building a business plan.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because in when you first brought up this idea, this seems like such a fantastic comparison. Now, of course, it's not exactly apples to apples, but
sure.
But with so much money to have all of this cash and none of the focus required or
right.
the strategy.
Right. If you had a smaller investment, then you would be forced to
mm-hmm.
focus on how do you bring about this idea of creating an infrastructure that will support electric vehicles throughout an entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a limited budget, then you have to say, all right, we can't do everything. So let's focus on what we can do and prioritize what we can do. And that way we can really focus, be really, really careful, and we can build incrementally. When you get this huge investment, then you think, hey, we can do everything. So let's do, you know, first of all, let's have crazy amenities. You know, let's do that startup thing where you have the headquarter office that has all the bells and whistles.
Vintage pinball machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing. The infinity swimming pool that's in the executive lounge, that kind of thing.
Sure. Musical guests.
Yes. Who knows? We will talk more about that a little bit later too. Not the musical guest part, but some of the crazy amenities. And it just meant that you lacked that focus. Mm-hmm. And that was probably one of the many reasons, because this is a complex issue. It's not like you can point at one thing and say, this is the reason this ultimately failed.
That's an excellent point too, because one of the valuable things that a dissection of this situation does is it helps give us a behind the curtain look at why so many similar companies fail or succeed.
Right.
And when we look at a lot of these companies, here's the thing that gets me. One thing a lot of companies have in common with this, whether it's auto or just pure tech, is that there is very easily a cult of personality that forms.
Yes. Yes. We see that in over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. And it depends on the personality, how that cult ends up kind of being, projected, like how the fans fall in line, because you could say that about Bill Gates.
Absolutely.
You could certainly say that about Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk, very, very similar. So you can see this over and over. Not every company has like the figurehead that people identify around. Sometimes it's more around a brand and not a person.
Sure.
But you still get this kind of cult of personality. It's just dependent on whether or not it forms around an individual or around just a brand identity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't really talked about what they had planned on doing, and that's largely because they didn't have a really firm plan in place until after the company itself had formed. Now, the company formed in 2007.
Yep.
And generally speaking, the plan was to seek out government subsidies and tax incentives to try and develop a positive environment for electric vehicles. And that Better Place would partner with car manufacturers to develop cars that would be electric, that would have specific types of battery packs that would be compatible with what Better Place would provide, which would be charging stations and battery swapping stations.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea would be, if you bought a car that was compatible with Better Place's stations, you would be able to recharge there and get your battery swapped out for a subscription fee. This to me was fascinating. This idea that Agassi had of, how about we create a company that's similar to cell phones?
Yeah, you buy a package and a service, right?
Yeah. You get a subsidized car that would be like a subsidized cell phone. This would be like the way cell phone plans traditionally have been in the United States. It's not like that all around the world.
No.
You know, there's some places in the world where you buy the unsubsidized phone full price, but then your monthly services are less than what you would get in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., you buy a subsidized phone, but then you're under contract for, you know,
two years
is typical, and you get, you know, you're paying for that really in those fees month to month, as opposed to buying it all up front. Well, he was talking about doing a similar thing with cars, where your purchase price for a car would be lower. He was saying at the time, Agassi, that the electric vehicles would be about half of what you would get for a comparable gasoline powered car. Which had other experts in the field scratching their heads and say what?
Mm-hmm.
How are you making this promise? How can you promise to produce an electric vehicle for that low? Because we're building electric vehicles and it is expensive.
Yeah. Even if you build them like gangbusters, that's the thing. That's something that even Elon Musk has not reached yet. The economy of scale.
Right. Yeah. His first approach was to go with, let's build the sexiest electric vehicle we can, which was the Tesla Roadster.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, there were people who were like, man, that thing just looks like it looks like it's fast when it's standing still.
Yeah. Let's have celebrities drive it.
Yeah.
Let's have people, let's influence the influencers.
Right. So we're getting people who are not just celebrities, but also business leaders, mm-hmm. particularly since they were catering mainly to San Francisco.
Yeah.
They were getting all the other tech company leaders, you know, like sure. Google, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. getting really interested in these vehicles. And then they said, what we'll do is we'll continue to court the high-end market at first. We'll use that money to build out an infrastructure, supercharging stations, things like that. Mm-hmm. That's what you're starting to see now with the supercharging stations being built across the United States, even in states where it is not currently legal to buy a Tesla vehicle. You have to leave the state to buy it. It's not mm-hmm. that it's illegal to drive it. It's perfectly legal to drive the vehicles. Mm-hmm. But because of, that's an entirely different episode, but yeah. because of issues with car dealerships. Because Tesla, they sell the cars direct, right? Direct mm-hmm. to the customer. Unlike all other auto manufacturers that go through dealerships.
Right. The big three give a wholesale to a dealership who then sells to the end user.
Right.
With Tesla, you're right. That is a different bag of badgers or a box of circuits. But it is really important to say, because I think that's a brilliant comparison when we look at this. If we compare Better Place and Tesla, one of the big, big differences, right? Maybe I would submit to you the biggest difference is that Tesla said one car, make it awesome, top of the market, and then baby steps.
Yes. And Better Place, their approach was, let's try and aim for the moderate car, the basic car market, mm-hmm. trying to hit at your average consumer, mm-hmm. right? Go for that person. And then you will end up just hitting that across the entire market, which in this case really was Israel, like we were saying before.
Right.
Although there were plans, grandiose plans again, to immediately expand in other markets like Denmark and Australia. Those were the three original ones, Israel, Denmark, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And with more plans of expanding into the United States and other countries as well.
Now, you had also mentioned before, this is good because when we talk about the cult of personality, in the beginning, people were really on board with Better Place. And he even made an appearance at a TED conference, right?
In 2009, he took the stage at a TED conference. He laid out his plan of selling millions of electronic vehicles in Israel. He supported it with this idea of the infrastructure they wanted to make, mm-hmm. the charging stations and the battery swapping stations. And, you know, it was a compelling argument. The idea of, look, we're not saying build an electric vehicle with no support. We're saying let's partner with electric vehicles, like some manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
And partner with them to produce vehicles. We'll also produce the infrastructure by building out these charging stations and battery swapping stations.
Right.
And then there'll be no excuse to not swap over. You just tell the customer, hey, look, it's a cheap vehicle because we're subsidizing it.
It's lower than your car note if you bought a gas vehicle.
Yeah, you don't have to. You'll have a subscription where mm-hmm. you'll end up paying a certain amount per month. But look, it's going to be lower than your gas bill would be, like to pay for the fuel to fuel your car.
And let's remember that detail, too.
Right. And you'll even be able to charge it at home. I mean, think about some of the promises were crazy, like, you could have a basic charging cable installed in your house for free, or you could pay $500 and get a robot automated charging station. Imagine pulling into your garage and a robotic arm, Jetson style, plugs into your vehicle without you having to do anything else. And that's just $500, a $500 installation fee to have a fully automated robot arm doing this perfectly. And this had people excited at TED. I mean, they got like one of the crazy, super long standing ovation responses.
Right, yeah.
Whereas you had probably a few people in that audience, I would imagine. A few people who might have had, I don't know, some experience with robotics, let's say.
Perhaps maybe experts.
Yeah, people who perhaps worked in the auto industry.
Yeah.
Those folks were probably still sitting in their chairs thinking, hang on, how can you promise this free cable installation when something like that has real cost? I mean, that's incredibly expensive to put in by itself, let alone a robotic one that is fully automated. And, that's so much research and development to test a system like that, to build a system, test it, make sure that it works properly. You don't want to have you know, a robot arm that's just blindly trying to plug in a cable and scratching up your vehicle.
Right. It's trying to charge your cat. Who knows?
Exactly. Right. You know, next thing you know, Fluffy's got a couple hundred volts running through her. That's not good business,
yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And even if we look at it from the angle of the proprietary nature, which is another sticky thing in these kind of private public partnerships.
Right. The idea of, sure, you can buy this vehicle from this manufacturer. Sure. Mm-hmm. And you can charge it at these stations. But if you buy an electric vehicle from any other manufacturer,
right,
it's not compatible with these charging stations.
Yeah.
Ben, let me ask you this. Let's say that you, as a consumer, go to an auto dealership and you're looking at a line of, let's say it's a used car dealership even.
Sounds like my style.
Because now you're talking about all sorts of different auto manufacturers being represented on this one lot. Right. Because otherwise, if you go to a dealership, you're looking at like a, you know, let's say it's a Toyota dealership. They're all Toyota vehicles.
I see what you're saying.
But if you go to a used car dealership, you might see Toyotas. You might see, you know, cars from General Motors. You might see cars from Ford. You might, you know, all of those could be represented in a big used car lot.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you buy a gas-powered vehicle and then you need to refuel your vehicle, do you have to worry about what kind of fueling station you pull into in general in the United States? No, because any fueling station you go to is going to have fuel pumps that fit all cars because that's standardized, right?
Right. We have a law about that.
Yeah. So you don't have to worry. Like if you bought a car from Toyota or you bought a car from Ford or you bought a car from anywhere else that was a gasoline powered vehicle, then any gas station you pull into, you can be confident the gas pumps are compatible with your car.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's say you bought an electric vehicle. let's say it's a Tesla, for example. And let's say that there are other cars, like Better Place. Let's say that Better Place also had cars out on the market. Now you've got a vehicle that has a proprietary port that you have to plug into, which means that only certain types of plugs are going to fit your vehicle and others will not. Now you have to worry about where you can go to recharge your vehicle. Now, most of these electric vehicles are going to have some sort of plug-in to it so that you can go into an electric vehicle charging station and have some kind of standardized approach.
Yeah.
But if you want a supercharger, like the Tesla supercharge approach, that's proprietary.
Right.
And that's also the one that will give you a half charge of your vehicle in 20 minutes.
Which is still crazy science fiction stuff to me, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And although it's crazy science fiction stuff, if you're a motorist and you are on your way from point A to point B, the thought of spending 20 minutes to get a half charge on your vehicle is probably something you're not crazy about. Forget the fact that you're probably going to go way further than you necessarily need to on a half charge, right? Your driving range these days is pretty decent.
Right.
From just an idea of, I have to stop and refuel my vehicle, that's not a very attractive proposition.
Right. Yeah. One of the great buzzwords for that is range anxiety.
Yes. Which was one of the things that Better Place was trying to address, right?
Right. Yeah.
They were saying that by building out this infrastructure throughout an entire country and to allow the battery swapping, which was a big one. I mean, Tesla's also looking into that as well.
That's huge. Yeah.
It means that you would take away this range anxiety, right? Because you could just pull into one of these stations, and because you have put them throughout the entire country, you could swap it out. However, again, if you wanted to ever have, as a consumer, the freedom of choice to buy a different electric vehicle, you can't avail yourself to those kind of stations because they're not compatible.
Nope. You have to hope somebody makes an adapter at best.
Right. Or that they build out comparable stations so that you end up having these side by side. Like, I can imagine a refueling station where, all right, here's where Tesla drivers have to pull in.
Oh, yeah.
Here's where Better Place drivers would have had to have pulled in had that actually continued to work.
Here's another thing. Now, this is a bit of a tangent, so forgive me on this.
Sure.
But can you imagine how angry you would be if you did something that was like the equivalent of jailbreaking your Better Place vehicle? And then it got bricked. Can you imagine breaking a car?
Right. To the point where you can no longer charge it. And yeah, that would be. And if we're talking about a model that's similar to cell phones, this is not something that's outside the realm of possibility.
No, this is disturbingly possible.
Yeah.
Or it was. Now, one thing I want to go back to, you said earlier, you made the great point that is another thing different to the Tesla model, which is the Better Place wanted a network of cars that people could choose from, sort of like how if you want an iPhone with Apple, then all you can do is buy some kind of iPhone. But what they wanted to do is be more of an Android to Tesla's Apple, right?
You could
buy any one of a number of cars. However,
it didn't work out that way, did it?
No, sir.
There was only one manufacturer that Better Place was able to work with in the history of Better Place being around. Better Place was around from 2007 to 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And the only manufacturer, and Ed, please correct me if you know the pronunciation and I screw it up, Renault.
Very,
see, being American, I'm ignorant. Second of all, being a non-driver, I'm also doubly ignorant. So Renault, which I should have guessed based upon the spelling, Renault was the only manufacturer with which Better Place was able to form a relationship in its brief existence. And there was really only one vehicle that was produced.
Yep, the Fluence ZE. And this was a new vehicle, too, because it Better Place predates the Renault. This Fluence, at least, that came out in 2009, and it's not a bad car, man. It's got a 22 kilowatt lithium ion battery. Its range, is 115 miles for you and I, or for the rest of the world, 185 kilometers.
That's fair.
And, this seems like a pretty good car to use. It's still you know, it's still around. You can still buy them. They're still being made in South Korea, and the ones I think made in Israel were, or the ones used in Israel rather, were made in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a legit vehicle.
Yeah. The only issue here is that now Better Place no longer has those battery swapping stations. They still have some right. charging stations.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that when we get toward the end of the podcast. But it was one of those things where if it had worked, you would have had a battery swapping station be able to swap out in 5 minutes. And if you had a subscription mm-hmm. where you're not paying on that per swap, there's no incentive for you to not swap out the battery, right? If it's covered under your subscription that comes along with buying one of these vehicles, then you drive in, you have your battery swapped out, takes maybe 5 minutes, but that's about the same amount of time you'd spend at a typical fueling station.
Ah, yes, which goes exactly to, it goes exactly to the fantastic point you made there about the difference with, you know, no matter how amazing from a technical standpoint it is to charge a battery in, half charge a battery in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's still a huge downer when you think, man, if I just had a internal combustion engine,
I could be on my way already.
Exactly.
Right. And keep in mind, you know, this is also trying to be a very special case, right? Because as studies have shown, your typical driver, at least in the United States, drives at most around 48 miles in a day.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Well, if your driving range is 115 miles, then you have got that more than covered, which means that all you have to do is just remember to plug your car in at the end of the day and it'll be fully ready for the next day. You don't have to worry about that range anxiety really kicking in because you've got more than enough capacity. It's when you're doing something special, like a long range trip.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that we're going to go to Disneyland. We're doing a cross country drive to go to, Anaheim, California.
You and I always talk about that. I mean, in my head,
you know, it's cause, you know, fall is coming around, and fall, that's when they do the Haunted Mansion overlay with Nightmare Before Christmas, which of course you and I both would really love to go on.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and we got to go together cause that's spooky, man. You don't want to go by yourself. But yeah, if we wanted to do a cross country trip, then clearly we would need that infrastructure there in order for us, cause we're going to go so far in a day that mm-hmm. you could conceivably go beyond that driving range easily. 115 miles, certainly, because, it's not like we're going to drive 100 miles and then spend the night and then another 100 miles. That's going to take us forever to get out there.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good point. So this idea works. It works in theory.
Yeah.
And what I got to ask you, man,
what happened?
What went wrong?
Yeah, you know, what happened? It's actually a laundry list of problems. All right. Ultimately, we're getting to May 2013 when the company had declared bankruptcy and ended up being sold for a pittance. So it raised about $1 billion, a little less, more like, you know, somewhere between 900 million and a billion. But mm-hmm. who counts between friends, right?
Yeah, right.
It was auctioned off at such a fraction of that. If you add up everything, including the assets of the company and its intellectual property, it's about $12 million. That's a huge, huge insult there in a way. I mean, not even insulting. It was just sad, right?
Yeah. It's a fire sale because the first question you have to ask is what happened to all of this money? It didn't evaporate, surely.
Yeah. The thing that happened was that costs were greatly beyond what was anticipated, and the build times were greatly beyond what was anticipated. So costs ended up spiraling out of control, and they just weren't good they weren't very good ministers of the money, the capital mm-hmm. that they had. So first of all, let's talk about some of the stuff. The building out that infrastructure, incredibly expensive. They had guessed that a typical charging station would cost about $500,000. Later on, it would turn out to be closer to $2 million. So their plans to completely outfit Israel with these charging stations, originally they were looking at a $20 million cost to mm-hmm. completely do the country. Once they realized that they were one quarter lower than what, or rather it was going to cost four times as much per station.
Right.
You know, that's an $80 million price tag just for those charging stations alone. And, you know, then the delays in building, that ends up adding up more costs. So that was huge, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, the partnership between Better Place and other companies only ever resulted in that one vehicle, right? The Renault Renault sedan. So if you didn't like that car, there was no incentive for you to go and buy one.
Yeah.
Right? You know, there was no other choice. So you had this or any other like gasoline powered vehicle.
Which is completely, to go back to our earlier comparison, completely like saying, oh, I want an Android phone, and Google and this one manufacturer saying something very much like the old Henry Ford quote, you can have any color Model T you want so long as it's black. Right,
exactly. Based upon the different reports we've read, essentially somewhere between 1,400 and 1,500 of those cars were sold total, period. So you can't support a company that has been going through $1 billion in capital by selling 1,400 cars. The math just doesn't really add up there. Third, that initial heavy funding, like we said, could have been the company's undoing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they had so much money to play with early on meant that they did not really focus and create a very conservative plan. And they ended up doing lots of crazy stuff, including like luxurious office spaces. They had a visitor center that was meant to be kind of an immersive experience to explain to you the wonders of the electric vehicle and the better place infrastructure, right?
Right. It was kind of Epcot-y, wasn't it?
Yeah. You read about it, like, it made me think kind of the World's Fair type thing seen in Iron Man, you know, those movies where you had this crazy kind of high tech immersive experience that was well beyond what you needed. Like the, Fast Company article described it as, there was a holographic theater where a holographic version of Agassi would tell you about Better Place, and that the theater had, the theater seats weren't just seats. They were vintage car seats that were all arranged in a certain way.
Yeah.
And that there was like a mile long track where you could do a test drive of an electric vehicle. And it was just one of those things where you could see how much money was being sunk into selling the idea. And not so much in making the idea become reality.
Making the t-shirts before you get the band together to rehearse.
Yes. This is making me think of someone we both know, actually. But no, it's, it's that whole idea where you're selling the idea, you're so in love with the idea, and you're so convinced the idea is a good idea.
Right.
That you're spending all your time convincing everyone else that it's a great idea and not spending the time actually making the idea happen. We actually mentioned this also off the air. Creative folks know this. You don't talk about your book before you write your book.
Mm-hmm.
You don't talk about your screenplay before you're finished writing your screenplay. You are setting yourself up for failure when you start talking about a project before you've actually finished a project. I have experienced this personally. I have been guilty of doing this.
I think everybody has, but luckily for both you and I, when we've done stuff like this in our past, we weren't losing almost $1 billion.
No. At most, we lost maybe something that would have entertained, I don't know, 50 people at most.
Yeah, and a little bit of self-respect. I'm going to be candid.
Yes, okay, yeah. So, I mean, there's only so much more of that I can lose before I'm just tapped out. But anyway.
Even this wasn't, these three reasons were not the only reasons.
No, you need to look at some pretty nasty other reasons too. I mean, okay, so we've got incredibly complex organization, right? They had offices in Israel. For a while, their headquarters was in Palo Alto, California.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Agassi was living, was in Palo Alto. He at one point decided to take a vacation, took a long vacation, like half a year vacation.
Whoa.
Went to Israel, met a woman, decided to essentially separate from his wife and start dating this woman, and decided to relocate to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he had changed the global headquarters to Israel, not to Palo Alto, which ruffled a lot of feathers in the company. But the company also got so complex that they had to hire an outside management firm to come in and try and make sense of everything. It just it ballooned so quickly. And I guess he also, there was some nepotism going on. He hired a lot of his own family to be in very important positions, none of which, by the way, none of the people in his executive team had any experience in the auto industry.
Right. Or in green technology, which is another very important part.
Two big strikes, right? As far as I know, none of the top executives were civil engineers either. So you're trying to build out an infrastructure for an electric vehicle, which is a green technology, and you don't have experts in any of those areas occupying the top positions in the company. Now, on top of that, there are also lots of reports. The Fast Company piece particularly spelled this out, that Agassi has, he's not necessarily a humble individual. He's quite the self-promoter. Mm-hmm. And, even going back to that, those early days with the white paper, he started to liken the work that they were proposing. Keep in mind, they hadn't built anything at this point, but saying that it was going to be transformative, like the work by Edison or even James Watt.
Yeah.
So these are the folks who, you know, who brought electricity to the world, really. They were the ones who helped build out that infrastructure.
They're like Promethean, pretty much.
Yeah, and he's saying, look, we're going to do the same thing without even having done anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was all, like, it's very easy to talk about it. It's really hard to do, as he learned. He also said that he kind of implied he had the qualities of the bravery of Churchill, the vision of JFK, the determination of Reagan. So we're suggesting that hubris may have played a part.
Yeah.
In the failure of this company. And it was funny because, you know, he actually went public with this idea. This is that going back to that, you don't talk about it before you do it.
Right.
He went public with the idea for a better place before he even quit his previous job. He was at another job for, another like 3 or 4 months before he quit. And he talks about it in interviews about how, oh yeah, after I announced this, just a few days later, I quit my job and I started Better Place. No. What happened was he talked about it, and then 3 months later, the job where he was, he had thought he was going to become the next CEO, and they went with someone else, and then he quit his job and started Better Place. Not saying that the things are definitely connected, but, you know, in hindsight, it looks like that. So,
yeah.
He also talked about ordering 100,000 Renault cars between 2011 and 2016, like, to have 100,000, a fleet of these cars, to sell to the Israeli market. And eventually he said Israel and Denmark.
Oh, and you've got some great numbers here.
Yeah. Yeah. So 100,000 cars in Israel would account for more than half of all new cars for the car market. So in other words, you're looking at fewer than 200,000 new cars in Israel are going to be purchased in any given year. That's just how big that market is. And he was expecting to have more than half of that market made up of the Better Place cars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not a single car manufacturer has a share over 15% of that market. Mm-hmm. Hyundai is the one that has the biggest.
Right.
So I think it's Hyundai. I might be wrong about that, but I know that it was 15%. So that means that not only would he be dominating the new car market, but suddenly consumer behavior would completely change. And instead of people being interested in various types of cars, everyone would suddenly be focused on this one car. Keep in mind, there was only one model available and it was a sedan. So
still,
if you didn't want a sedan, then, you know, I don't know why you would end up buying this car.
And if you had a larger family, then there's so many situations. You have a larger family, or you're just a college student buying their first car, and cars can be very difficult to afford. It's kind of tough to get in the United States if you've never lived somewhere else. You've never really read about this, but the United States having such a car culture, it becomes sort of expected that someone will have a car, and there are these rites of passage for it. But that is not in any way the case across the rest of the world. A car is a big investment here. It's a huge investment in other places where, you know, cost of living and housing and basic staples of food are more expensive to begin
with. Even just the layout of cities.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these cities are so old that, you know, they're not laid out for vehicles, like for cars.
Yeah,
you know?
Very narrow streets. Yeah, just so. And so the question then becomes, you know, what more of a thing, like, what do I have to do as a car company to convince you to spend all this money and take on all this burden, this inconvenience, this ownership? And I think there was a miscalculation there.
Yeah, well, considering that they only sold 100 cars in the first couple of months that they had cars to sell, and most of those customers were Better Place employees, I think you're right.
Yeah, and
it just wasn't going to happen.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What was that thing you said in the beginning? It was one of those robot arm statements. Oh, the car will be cheaper. So much cheaper.
Yeah, because it'd be subsidized because you would have this subscription fee. It turned out that the cost of producing these was so high. Mm-hmm. And Renault was the only company that they were working with, right? Mm-hmm. Agassi said that he was hoping, or at least the people around him said that what he was trying to do was entice other car manufacturers to join in as well. And then the company, Better Place, would have a lot more leverage, right? Because mm-hmm. they could pit the different car manufacturers against each other and say, hey, you want to sell this car to us for $38,000, but we can get a car from this other company for, you know, $18,000. So you're going to have to cut some money off of that price tag. Yeah. And then they could pass that on to the Better Place customers. But that never happened.
Well, and also, to be absolutely fair, that strategy is a viable one, but there's one point that I think we should make for anybody who wonders why there are so few car companies in the world. Because if you think about it, there's so many cars, Jonathan.
Yeah.
And there are so few car manufacturers. And there are countries that have no domestic car manufacturing because the amount of quote unquote moving parts, the difficulty of all that.
The starting capital you need in order to get into that business is gigantic.
Right. Yeah. Like a lot of small businesses fail in the first 5 years.
Yeah.
And with startup car companies, it's even more difficult and even more attrition in that space. So Tesla, my friend, is a diamond in the rough. I wouldn't say winning the lottery because I don't think it's entirely luck based.
No.
But this is
but it's a very it's a very interesting contrast to what Better Place was.
Yeah.
Right? And then on top of all that, I mean, there were times where Agassi was actually saying that he could even see them giving away a car. Like, you would get the subscription fee and then you would get a car, like in a cell phone, like truly subsidized to the point where you're not paying for the car, you're just paying for the service. That was never a possibility with the way they were doing business at that point.
And that's kind of a pure tech strategy too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because didn't you tell me earlier, or maybe I just heard it on the show a while back about, during console wars, some of the console makers will sell it at a loss.
Yeah, they sell it at a loss and they make it up in games. Now that only works, of course, if you are in the business of making games.
And if you have more than one game.
Yeah. If you are just making one game, which is essentially what Better Place was doing, if you have one game and not everyone wants that game, and in fact, very few people want that game, you can't really support selling the console at a loss.
Yeah.
So that was a big issue. And then, there was a lot of friction between Agassi and his executive team. They were starting to get really upset with his move from Palo Alto to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up hiring a lot of his girlfriend's friends in positions when they said that even watered down this already kind of weak executive team, people who weren't really, some of them were really good at what they did. It's just that what they did was not aligned with running an auto company.
Right, yeah.
And so first he was asked to kind of become a figurehead, and he refused. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he was forced out. He was fired as CEO in October 2012. And he was replaced by Evan Thornley, who was the CEO of Better Place Australia, because they had set up headquarters in all the countries they were planning on operating in.
Denmark, Australia, Israel.
Yep. And of course, they had the Palo Alto office in the United States. So at that time, the company had lost about $490 million, not just gone through the capital. I mean, they were in the hole.
Wow.
And then they were losing about $500,000 per day. So Thornley, he was a businessman and politician back in Australia. He actually had a lot of interesting things to say in that Fast Company article, where he was talking about how some of the horrible deals that Agassi had gotten into. Agassi had given all these companies contracts, and then given these, they had these huge cancellation fees. Agassi hadn't really negotiated with the companies at all.
Mm-hmm.
So he was essentially saying, like, they would say, all right, well, if you cancel out of this, you're going to owe us X million dollars. And he said, sure, signs on the dotted line. And so there was no way to get out of the contracts. And in fact, the only way they could have maybe kept the company going would be if they were able to expand into other markets. But they had already, that meant that they had to start spending even more money. So it was just this kind of deep cavern that he found himself in. And, He wasn't given a long time to really try and establish anything. He was put in place in October 2012.
Thornley,
that is. And then in January 2013, he was fired.
Wow.
So he had only had a couple of months to really try and work anything. I don't know that anyone could have turned things around so dramatically in that period to make everyone happy.
Yeah, that's my question. What could he have possibly done? Because those kind of agreements are pretty ironclad.
Yeah. It's not like he was the one who signed them either. So that was kind of crazy. So eventually they were purchased by Sunrise. They declared bankruptcy. Better Place to declare and liquidated its assets. What little there were.
Mm-hmm.
Sunrise bought the company, said that they would keep on 50 of the 80 employees, and that they would operate 15 charging stations in Israel for at least 2 years. All the battery swapping stations gone, 15 charging stations would be all that would remain. And ultimately, they had sold about 1,500 vehicles. And so that's kind of the end of the Better Place story.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this kind of, it's a really good parallel to that .com. It's that idea of, here's an incredible opportunity. And the opportunity is real.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real opportunity to seize. And there's a real way of actually making it work. The example for .com would be Amazon. Amazon came out around the time of the .com boom and survived. It survived and then later thrived, but it had a real rough, slow start. And it was only through taking a fairly conservative approach, taking risks where there were risks to be had, but not doing so, not just saying, oh, well, we're just going to sell everything to everyone everywhere. That wasn't what Amazon said at first. They concentrated on books. That's
right.
What they did.
Yep.
And it was only after building out that business that they started to kind of grow. And they did so in a very, very strategic way.
Mm-hmm.
Still taking risks again when they could. Better Place was more about, let's aim for the pie in the sky approach. And we're just going to do everything, or at least we're going to say we're going to do everything, and we'll figure out how to do everything later.
Yeah, the thing is that you can be an idea person, but you can't not be an engineer of some sort in this sort of space. So, like, if we look at Elon Musk, he sometimes may come off as a big idea person. You remember the last time we were hanging out on Tech Stuff, we talked about the Hyperloop.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And if it were anyone other than Elon Musk, I would say it was just vaporware.
Right.
But he's led up to this, and we've both seen in our respective shows, we've both seen the evolution in this guy. So even though he might sound like he's some big idea guy who will vanish in some weird Ponzi scheme, everything he's done for years,
he's gone to space, or at least his company has sent stuff to space. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. He backs up either through his own ingenuity mm-hmm. or by hiring people who know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. He has been able to make great headway in the various industries that he's entered into. So whether Hyperloop ever happens, I mean, that's an interesting idea. I would love to see it happen. Whether it ever happens, I don't know. But the fact that he has made such incredible progress in electric vehicles in the United States already, mm-hmm. and he's done it in this very, like, you know, like we said, it's just as flashy in many ways as Better Place.
Yeah.
But it was a fundamentally different strategy that actually has worked.
Yeah.
It's worked slowly. It's a very gradual progression, but it's actually working. It'll be interesting to see if that continues. And, to me, I think the thing to take away from this is that the purpose of Better Place was in many ways noble, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of getting off of fossil fuels to move to a renewable energy source, keeping in mind that depending upon how you generate the electricity, they had said that they wanted to make sure that all of their charging stations were generating electricity in renewable ways.
Okay.
So either through solar power, hydropower, wind power, whatever. You know, as long as you're doing that kind of thing and you're being responsible with the way you generate electricity, that's wonderful. We want to see that happen. And in fact, I don't think anyone maybe some car companies wanted to see Better Place fail, but I don't think anyone really wanted Better Place to fail. It was just that Mm-mm. They set themselves up for failure. They didn't set themselves up for success.
Right. It's very, I'm really glad you said that, because it's very important to note that in this context, there were no con men. There were no charlatans. There were people who were honestly trying to get a good idea from the realm of imagination mm-hmm. into the real world, as you said.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it looks like what we've learned through our case study of some of this stuff is that it was ultimately mismanagement, more than a little bit of ego.
Yep.
And a lack of patience.
Yeah, I think so. I think they were too aggressive too early and too unrealistic. I think, maybe we can see sunrise if whether or not after the 2 years are up, mm-hmm. if they continue to support those charging stations, if we continue to see an effort to move over to electric vehicles in Israel in particular, because that was the main base of operations, it'll be interesting to see if that continues or if it'll take something like Tesla ultimately making this approach work really well. And of course, you know, other companies, other established car companies are also producing electric vehicles.
Sure, absolutely.
They tend to be very, like a small slice of the overall pie chart that is what they offer.
Absolutely.
But it's something that we will continue to see in the future. So, Ben, I have to thank you for coming onto the show and participating in this and talking about this, this incredible company. And it's interesting to really look at the drama behind it. And again, there's so many lessons to learn, not just in the auto industry, but in the tech industry in general. We've seen this lesson repeated multiple times that it was fun to actually dive into this. I had no knowledge of Better Place before we started looking into this episode. So for me, it was really educational.
Oh, and thank you for the email there, Russell. And thank you, as always, Jonathan, for having me on. If you don't mind, I'd like to plug a couple things real
quick. Absolutely.
Okay, first thing I want to plug is Brain Stuff, which is our everyday science show. We've got a video series on YouTube where listeners, you can see Jonathan and myself and several other of our fantastic co-hosts.
Including Lauren.
Including Lauren. Yep. I can't believe I forgot to say yes. Including Lauren. And you can see Lauren and Jonathan co-host some stuff on there, where they answer questions about everything from, hair to lightsabers and twins.
We've got some. I talk about whether or not a sound is so loud it can kill you. Lauren and Joe McCormick have a great video about laugh tracks,
which goes into my next plug, Jonathan, and that is for forward thinking.
You're plugging stuff that I'm on.
Yeah, I'm plugging. I don't know if the Tech Stuff listeners know about this. I assume that you do, but if this is your first time checking out this show and you enjoyed it, you can also find more future oriented topics.
Sure,
and not just in tech, but the big questions of the future.
And then, of course, I have to plug Car Stuff that you are on with Scott Benjamin,
if you're into
cars, or even if you're just interested in it, but you've always been intimidated, that's a great podcast to listen to, because Ben, you are really good at talking to Scott, who has an incredible expertise.
Oh yeah.
In all things automotive. And you really are great at having this conversation with him, where you can really get to the bottom of everything from how specific parts of a car work to trends in vehicles to all sorts of stuff. It's a great podcast.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you so much. We've got to stop our love fest here, right?
Yeah. Well, we will, except for stuff they don't want you to know, which I can't talk about. But you should check it out. But, they don't want me to say anymore.
You'll redact that.
Yeah. Redacted. All right. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you have any suggestions, like Russell, you can write to us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. Our handle at all three is techstuffhsw, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.